schedule that'll be happening next week. But first, let's take a short musical break to hear a song about a boy in the girls' room, which is the title of the song from Julie Shore.
Short hair, no chest, I can tell you've already assessed that it must be true. I shouldn't be sharing a stall next to you. Don't stare, ma'am, please don't scream. There's no need to call security. I promise I'm not a guy. You can just call me a B-O-I. To do today than to scare you nice upstanding ladies away. Ma'am, please don't hit me with your bag. Just think of me as a nice young girl in drag. I'm not a guy, but I'm not some dolled up girl. I can see how that would shake your whole damn world. But could we discuss this later, please? I've been driving for 6 hours and I've been drinking too much tea. So sure about your thoughts on my gender. Could you please explain to my vagina that I'm a man? Boys will be boys and girls will be girls long after we get tattoos and shave off all our curls. There's no need to chase me from the bathroom stall. No need at all. Cheap peep show. If I was trying to pick up women, there are better spots to go. I don't enjoy this either, but for now I have no choice. Until the happy day I find a door that's labeled boys.
After hours on the road, I can't hold it anymore. And the only place to go is some scary rest stop on the side of the road. Try to tuck my shirt in, yeah, hoping they'll see my butt. But with this shirt that I'm wearing, it could look kinda like a man's chest. So I opened up the door, but I heard the ladies grasp, looking for their purses. They grab them so fast. And one of the ladies swung at me and screamed, "You primer!"
Hey lady, hey
but
lady.
That ended quick as I said, "Look," and lifted up my shirt.
You didn't really do that, did you?
Hell yeah, man. You know, you gotta do what you gotta do. Desperate times call for desperate measures. You know, they doubt you, prove them wrong. In the wise words of Goddess, baby. Prove them wrong.
I'm just a dyke until I have to pee. Then I have the whole motherfucking world staring at me. Am I such a freak that your jaw has to hit the floor? Yes, I read the door. So go tell your dashing husband, Bubba, that I'm here. And I'll explain again, I'm not a guy, I'm just a queer. Maybe then we can all just be friends. But that rebel t-shirt tells me that's not how it's gonna end. I'm always gonna be the boy in the girl's room, unless I buy myself a nice wig and a dress. And if you think I look bad now, no one wants to see that level of mess. This goes out to all my boys in the girl's rooms. I know society has made you shy, but know you're not alone. And keep on going proudly, 'cause somewhere out there there's a hot girl looking for her B-O-I.
Welcome back to Out Loud, the Queer Culture Radio Show on KBOO. My name is Carla. That song that we just heard was Boy in the Girls' Room, spelled B-O-I. The musician was Julie Schur with Goddess on backup. And I chose that song for tonight's radio show because we are going to be focusing on the Meaningful Care Conference, which is something we'll go into a lot more detail about during the show. There will be gender-neutral bathrooms at the conference, and accessing restrooms is something that is a challenge for people that are either transgender or perhaps gender non-conforming, and that song highlighted that perfectly. My apologies for the edits in the song. We did have to make that FCC friendly for our time slot this evening, but I encourage you to look up the full song to get the full effect. Again, Boy, B-O-I, in the Girls' Room was what that song was titled. I'd like to move on to our interview with Dana and Alex, and welcome to the show this evening.
Thanks so much for having us, Carla.
Yes, thank you a lot.
I'm excited to have you guys here. I really love the Meaningful Care Conference. I will just show my appreciation. Who wants to say, what is this conference really all about?
So this conference started out of a program with Multnomah County. They saw a need in the community, and they went and organized to create a cultural competency training for health and social service providers in the area. And that started about 7 years ago. And about in 2012, the Multnomah County approached the LGBTQ Health Coalition and said, hey, does the community want to take this on and really own the conference and help it grow into what it needs to be to meet community needs, which was awesome. And so while we still maintain Multnomah County support, we have created, as a group of volunteers, a cultural competency training for health and social service providers to really address the current needs and also highlight the great work that's being done in our community for health and well-being.
And so thank you, Dana, for that background. And I know the conference has grown and grown and grown this year, I mean, over the years. And the lineup that you guys have for this year looks really awesome. But before we get to that, what's the website for listeners that want to either do a little investigation or maybe even register?
So to learn about the Health Coalition, you go to www.OregonLGBTQHealth.org. Again, that's OregonLGBTQHealth.org. And if you go to /MCC, you'll get to the Meaningful Care Conference and can see all of the details, including the full program online, and click the button to register.
Right on. Now, is there a cost to register, a cost to attend?
So we have different levels because we do offer continuing medical education credits as well as continuing education units depending on your profession. The general admission cost is $65, $85 for CEUs, and $150 for CMEs. And that's because of the costs associated with us offering that benefit to providers.
Okay. And so for folks that don't work in healthcare, when we say providers, what are we really talking about?
So this conference is really targeted at primary care providers, which are nurse practitioners, nurses, doctors, but also social workers, mental health providers, naturopaths, midwives, community health workers, and we even really want to focus on healthcare administrators and the systems, because this conference especially is going to have more of a public health focus, because providers aren't working in a vacuum, especially as we've seen with health transformation, and not having a system that supports you, even if you're the most culturally competent provider out there, doesn't mean that you're going to be successful in your system. So the conference targets the whole gamut of providers, and really we also encourage community members to participate, because having that voice in the room really makes a difference.
I agree. And might this be something, if there's a listener who maybe has had an experience with a medical provider that was less than comfortable or less than ideal, or let's just say not right, something happened at the doctor's office and you're a lesbian or a gay man or bisexual, transgender, somehow identifying what I like to say the rainbow spectrum, and maybe even your lab tech, the person drawing your blood, said something or did something that was not right. Like, can listeners maybe encourage their providers to come, or what's your thought on that?
I strongly encourage, if you have a good dialogue with your provider, to encourage them to attend, or say, hey, I had this really awkward interaction with your front desk staff. Here's this opportunity. Please make sure that they know it is on March 28th. So it's fast approaching, but there's definitely space, and we'd love to have people attend. We have over 300 people registered as of today, but there is space for more. But this is a great opportunity, whoever your ally is in your healthcare setting that you feel comfortable talking to say, hey, take advantage of this. We do offer any provider who attends will has the opportunity to be listed in our resource directory as someone who's committed to providing culturally competent care. Can't vouch for people's providing, but I can say that they've attended the training and that they have made a public statement that they're committed to providing that care to our community.
Wonderful. And then will that database be available or that registry?
It's already available on our website, www.OregonLGBTQHealth.org, and it has the folks that attended in 2012, as well as folks who have attended trainings organized by our partnering organizations.
Okay, that's wonderful. So what are some of the highlights that you're looking forward to this year?
Alex, why don't you take that?
Okay, well, there are some highlights I'm looking forward to, especially like Josh Ferrer, who works for the Cascade AIDS Project, will be there talking about PrEP, which is pre-exposure prophylactic, is a medication that you can take to greatly reduce your risk of contracting HIV. And also will be Maurice Evans, who also works at CAP, which I should say is the Cascade AIDS Project. And he will be talking about ways to help reduce HIV transmission and hopefully bring those numbers down to zero.
Right mm-hmm. on. That does sound exciting. Oh, yeah. And I'm assuming, but let me ask, are there descriptions of these presenters on the website?
So we have the full program on the website. One mm-hmm. thing that we do is try and have as green a conference as possible. Mm-hmm. So conference participants get a flash drive of resources and get a one-page agenda, but everything else they have to download off of the internet. So folks can read the full descriptions there to kind of get a sense of it all. I do want to bring attention. We have two keynote speakers this year, which is huge to get such national-level exposure. Stephen Barrios is a Two-Spirit leader out of Montana who's been working in the field of HIV substance abuse prevention in the Northwest and in the region, especially in rural areas, and is going to bring attention to a lot of what he's seen over his life path. And I think we are really fortunate to hear his very impassioned voice. We also have Dr. Scout, who was a founder of the LGBTQ Tobacco Control Network and now works for Fenway Institute. And Dr. Scout recently got into the headlines for proposing to his partner at the White House. So we're really excited to have him. And you can also check out his blog on the Huffington Post to really bring attention to kind of the bigger picture public health and really inspire the providers in the room to take the next step for change.
That's so exciting. And I know Dr. Scout has been a huge influence in the world of what's been going on with tobacco companies targeting the LGBTQ community. And so a big shout out to Dr. Scout, who's really just been, you know, kind of raising that awareness on what's going on with health disparities in our own community. And maybe let's take a moment for folks that aren't aware. Maybe let's speak to what are some of the health disparities that impact or affect the lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgender communities.
So this is Dana. I think that some of the things that to highlight, although there's a great many, is lesbian women and gay men, because that's the data that we have, are more likely to have certain types of cancers and are more likely to be diagnosed much later on in life. And a lot of that is to do with lack of pre-screening because of discomfort with the provider setting. They're not asking for what they need as far as those kind of pre-cancer screenings. And so we're seeing people diagnosed a lot later in life with a lot worse outcomes. We're also seeing, especially among youth, higher suicide rates. I think one of the most compelling statistics that comes from Oregon is the level of intimate partner violence in the LGBTQ community across all the different ways that people identify is much higher than the straight population. And that's something that providers don't ever screen for because they say, oh, domestic violence only happens between men and women. And so they're not screening. People aren't getting access to resource. And they don't know about the amazing resources that we have, like Bradley Anglehouse, to really support our community. But that's not happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I do want to add also, there are many other health issues that are just being ignored, like for lesbian women and anyone who identifies as female and has sex with other people who identify as female, you know, until recently, they've been completely ignored for their sexual health needs. And this is a major issue. Like, the CDC actually just announced their first confirmed case of the transmission of HIV from one woman to another woman. You know, besides that, there are also many transgender health disparities. We were talking about smoking. It's believed about 33%, so basically one third of transgender individuals smoke cigarettes. And also, you know, just in general, discrimination. I mean, over a quarter of transgender individuals report having been harassed or even assaulted in a medical setting.
Mm-hmm. It really gets me going. I mean, I know that these things are true, and I am so thankful for the people that have been working around the Meaningful Care Conference to help make these changes. And I just want to say right away, thank you for coming to the show and for speaking to these things, because I think one of the challenges in our own community, let alone the larger community, is we never talk about this stuff. And the health of an individual not only affects that individual, it affects their family, their community. And we have to start making some changes. And and not to put the burden on the medical provider, but it really is the medical provider who's supposed to be helping to keep us healthy. And so I'm so excited that this conference is happening, and hopefully you'll have a lot more people registering. So tell us the website again that folks can find out the registration.
www.OregonLGBTQHealth.org. And that's www.OregonLGBTQHealth.org.
Okay. And again, if you're just joining the conversation, you're listening to Out Loud. This is the Queer Culture Radio Show on KBOO. My name is Carla, and we're speaking with Dana and Alex, who are both involved with the Meaningful Care Conference happening here in Portland next week on March 28th at the
Lloyd Center Doubletree.
Okay, so here in Northeast Portland, plenty of room for more people to register. I'm wondering, do you guys need volunteers, or do you need other ways for people to get involved?
So the conference is still looking for sponsorship. We actually are going to print on Thursday, so there's a mad dash to get the last names on all of our printed material that we will have. We have a lot of volunteers, but the thing is that we don't want to lose the momentum of the Meaningful Care Conference, and there's volunteers needed throughout the year. We do the Meaningful Care Conference every 2 years, and that's because we want to make sure that we can capture all of the great work that's being done locally and bring attention to that. But there's also a goal this year of any funds that are raised in excess of what we need to put on the conference would go to providing brown bag lunches and mini satellite trainings throughout rural Oregon. We still see a really strong need for providers in rural Oregon to be made aware of issues. And we have great partners with agencies that are already working in the area to be able to be seen as a trusted source of information to share that knowledge. And so this is a way of letting our rural community feel supported because it's really hard when a lot of stuff gets Portland-centric in Oregon.
Right on. So maybe if there's a listener outside the metro area that might want to invite you to their community to do this brown bag?
We would love to. And go to the website, and anytime you click on info, you get me, Dana. Okay. So feel free to email me or my co-coordinator, Aaron Reed, directly. We would love to be able to set something up in communities outside of the Portland metro area to really raise awareness about the needs of our community.
Right. Not just the health disparities, but what are the current best practices around different types of health screenings, the different types of education that individuals may need, all the different stuff that's going on that's medically and the social services as well.
And one great thing that I don't know if people are aware of, but in Oregon, the Oregon Health Plan is now covering hormone suppression for youth, and that's starting October 1st of 2014. And Jen Burleton of Transactive will be presenting on that at the conference, as well as providing prescribing guidelines for providers, because it's great that now insurance is going to cover it, but we want to make sure that providers know how to utilize that benefit to best help the community.
Right. And for folks that aren't familiar, Transactive is based here in Portland, but they are a national resource, and I almost want to say international. If there was a need or a request, Jen and her team at Transactive would get that need taken care of. Their website, transactiveonline.org, I believe, or your favorite search engine will help you find them. Transactive. They have resources available for families. They do counseling. They also have resources for schools and community groups. They serve ages birth to 18. So anything relating to gender, Transactive provides all sorts of services. Oh, and they have a lending library, I just learned. So for folks that like that stuff. All right. So now, with the Meaningful Care Conference, tell us a little bit more about some of the other workshops. We talked about Cascade AIDS Project, doing a couple different presentations. I'm curious what types of workshops there might be servicing or for providers of youth or for young people.
So the conference itself has different tracks. So we have a youth track, we have a transgender track, we also have specific populations, which includes racial and ethnic populations, as well as age and other kind of cross sections with the community. There's a lot of folks that are looking at the intersection of multiple disparities. And one thing that we've done to kind of tie everything together is also have a focus on historical trauma and the trauma of oppression, because I think that that is a unifying feature that a lot of folks are facing. And so we have a lot of mental health track presentations focusing on that historical trauma. Did you want to add anything, Alex? Or
I'd just like to add that I've looked at all of the tracks and I'm happy with all of them. Especially I'm happy with the transgender track. There are several great workshops that are going to be there. And as a trans woman, I'm more than happy with every single one of them that's showing up.
Mm-hmm. I love to hear that. I guess I'll admit I looked over the workshop stuff before we came on air today, and I just really love, I obviously love this conference, just to say that again, but I love how our community is already doing a lot of this work, and it's an awesome way that we come together and then provide this information and these resources back to the community. And so just kudos to people that are already making a difference, and having a appropriate comprehensive medical provider really does save lives. It's just that simple. So we are going to run out of time shortly, but I want to give you both, again, thank you so much. We've been speaking with Dana and Alex from the Meaningful Care Conference. Just give you both a chance to share any closing thoughts or anything else that you wanted to be sure our listeners knew about tonight.
Well, you know, the Meaningful Care Conference is going to be amazing, and we're really hoping that's going to create change. Also, for anyone listening throughout the Vancouver or Portland area, if you have not yet got health insurance, you should contact the Cascade AIDS Project. Their website is thecascadeaidsproject.org. They can get you all through that entire enrollment process and make it painless. I have seen the team that's working on it, and they work day and night to make sure everyone is being covered.
That's so important. Thank you for that message, Alex.
And I just want to say that I am so excited. I think this conference is the first time it's been completely volunteer-led. We used to have some paid staff, but this one time there is no paid staff running the conference, and we have the most amazing team of volunteers from the community and from and allies in the community that are really working to make this happen. And the whole conference agenda that we've been talking about was decided by the committee. It wasn't decided by any one individual. Same with our keynotes. It's been this kind of great synergy of energy coming together around a really important cause. And I think it makes it really unique to have a medical provider conference that is really so rooted in such a great community. So I want to say thank you. The website for you to get more information is www.OregonLGBTQHealth.org. And we look forward to seeing you on Friday, March 28th at the Lloyd Doubletree.
Right on. Thank you again. That was Dana and Alex as our guests this evening from the Meaningful Care Conference. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to repeat what Alex had said, though, about the Care Oregon and the open enrollment. For listeners that don't know, if you've been on the Oregon Health Plan, you can enroll anytime. If you have not yet had health insurance and you would like to engage with what's going on, the Care Oregon open enrollment will close at the end of March. March. So this is something you need to take action on. Alex mentioned the Cascade AIDS Project has eligibility screeners. There are many, many community groups and some faith-based organizations that have eligibility screeners, and it's their job to enroll you, someone who does not have health insurance. So I encourage you to find an eligibility screener. Cascade AIDS Project website is cascadeaids.org, but there are other eligibility people that can get you enrolled. But if you want to engage with CARE Oregon, you need to do it before the end of the month, all right? So take care of yourselves, people. My name is Carla, and we need to say goodbye. We're going to take a short musical break and hear some music from Logan Lynn. And then after that, we'll be listening to This Way Out. Now, the song that we're going to hear is titled Turn Me Out. And I want to say thank you for listening. Until next time, stay proud and live out loud.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212, in Vancouver at 360-694-1234, or at radiocab.net. Up next is This Way Out.
A 14-year-old boy, a man to come along and say, hey, I care about you. And then the next thing you know, that child is now identifying as homosexual.
What is the gay agenda? What do they want? A new world order where there's absolutely no restriction on sexual practices. They don't care about you. They want the children.
To This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The U.S. provides the inspiration for Ugandan persecution, rainbow Russian colors clash with homophobic thugs, and same-gender Brits married elsewhere get an early start on equality. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Manny Torres.
And I'm Michelle Marie Gilden.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian gay community for the week ending March 15, 2014. A lawsuit was filed on March 10th challenging Uganda's Anti-Homosexuality Act, which passed in Parliament in December and was signed into law by President Yoweri Museveni on February 24th. The law punishes consensual gay sex with up to life in prison, and both public advocacy for LGBT rights and people who fail to report suspected homosexuals to the authorities with up to 7 years behind bars. This include the Umbrella Civil Society Coalition on Human and Constitutional Law and several prominent Ugandan LGBT rights activists, along with scholars, political commentators, a former opposition leader, and even member of Parliament Fox Odoi. The lawmakers vote against the Anti-Homosexuality Act. The lawsuit asserts that the measure violates the Ugandan Constitution's guarantees of private rights, freedom from discrimination, freedom of assembly, expression, and association.
While the constitutional challenge works its way through courts in the African nation, many same petitions have filed for a permanent injunction with Uganda's High Court to the notorious Red Pepper Tight and other outlets pushing the name photos of injured gays and lesbians. The same court heard those acts awful in 2010. There's been an upsurgence. The Anti-Sexuality Act became law, and widespread reports increasingly attacks at people known to or perceived gay. Activists say that several have been evicted by their landlord last month, and that at least suspected homosexuals have arrested in Kala alone.
In Nigeria, an oxymoronic named Justice Minister says that history's silly homophobic measure, as the Kill All These Law, was enacted to protect gay people from visibly violent. Nigerian Justice Minister and Attorney General Mohamed Adoke claimed this that the government had to send with punitive measures so as to prevent citizens from taking laws in their own hand. The Sex Marriage Prohibition Act not only outlaws civil marriage for lesbian and gay people, also bans kind of advocacy by or on behalf of LGBT people and makes men in a same gender couples ceremony a serious offense. Before laws and penalties, national prohibitions, Nigeria already punished consensual adult gays with 4 years in prison. Those convicted of homosexuality in prominently Muslim northern states can be executed under Sharia law.
Anti-gay law being considered elsewhere on the continent. A bill to criminalize gay and sexual people has been introduced in the Democratic Republic of Congo. It has 36 different articles outlaw LGBT people and human rights activists in Central African country.
A 14-year-old boy, for a man to come along and say, hey, I care about you. And then the next thing you know, that child is now identifying as homosexual.
What is the gay agenda? What do they want? A new world order where there's absolutely no restriction on sexual practices. They don't care about you. They want the children.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The U.S. provides the inspiration for Ugandan persecution, rainbow Russian colors clash with homophobic thugs, and same-gender Brits married elsewhere get an early start on equality. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Johnny Torres.
And I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 15, 2014. A lawsuit was filed on March 10th challenging Uganda's Anti-Homosexuality Act, which passed in Parliament in December and was signed into law by President Yoweri Museveni on February 24th. The law punishes consensual adult gay sex with up to life in prison, and both public advocacy for LGBT rights and people who fail to report suspected homosexuals to the authorities with up to 7 years behind bars. Plaintiffs include the Umbrella Civil Society Coalition on Human Rights and Constitutional Law and several prominent Ugandan LGBT rights activists, along with scholars, political commentators, a former opposition leader, and even Member of Parliament Fox Odoi, the only lawmaker to vote against the Anti-Homosexuality Act. The lawsuit asserts that the measure violates the Ugandan Constitution's guarantees of privacy rights, freedom from discrimination, and freedom of assembly, expression, and association.
While the constitutional challenge works its way through the courts in the East African nation, many of the same petitioners have filed a request for a permanent injunction with Uganda's High Court to stop the notorious Red Pepper tabloid and other media outlets from publishing the names and photos of alleged gays and lesbians. The same court declared those acts unlawful in 2010, but there's been an ugly resurgence since the Anti-Homosexuality Act became law, and widespread reports of increasingly violent attacks against people known to be or perceived to be gay. Activists say that several people have been evicted by their landlords in the last month, and that at least 10 suspected homosexuals have been arrested in Kampala alone.
In Nigeria, the oxymoronically named justice minister says that his country's similarly homophobic measure, known as the Jail All the Gays Law, was enacted to protect gay people from vigilante violence. Nigerian Justice Minister and Attorney General Mohamed Adoke claimed this week that the government had to step in with punitive measures so as to prevent citizens from taking laws into their own hands. The Same-Sex Marriage Prohibition Act not only outlaws civil marriage for lesbian and gay couples, but also bans any kind of advocacy by or on behalf of LGBT people and makes involvement in a same-gender couple's marriage ceremony a serious criminal offense. Before the new laws enhanced penalties and additional prohibitions, Nigeria already punished consensual adult gay sex with 14 years in prison. Those convicted of homosexuality in predominantly Muslim northern states can be executed under Sharia law.
Anti-gay laws are being considered elsewhere on the continent. A bill to criminalize gay and transsexual people has been introduced in the Democratic Republic of Congo. It has 37 different articles to outlaw LGBT people, and human rights activists in the Central African country fear that it's likely to go well beyond merely criminalizing gay sex to outlaw other forms of expression of sexual orientation and gender identity. Sources say it punishes consensual adult gay sex with up to 5 years in prison and transgender people with up to 12 years. The Democratic Republic of Congo, previously known as Zaire, is a former Belgian colony that gained independence in 1960. It has no inherited laws against homosexual acts because Belgium decriminalized gay sex in 1795.
The majority leader of Kenya's National Assembly wants to know why the East African country's 1930s-era law punishing homosexual acts with up to 14 years in prison is not being enforced. According to AllAfrica.com, Aidan Duale, prompted by a fellow MP, asked Kenya's Director of Public Prosecutions this week to explain the non-enforcement of anti-gay laws, whether there are any organizations that are championing violation of the aforementioned laws, and if they are registered, what steps are being taken by the government to deregister or curtail such organizations' activities.
Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe, the Southern African nation's leading advocacy group, reported that leaders Natasha Dowell and Tawanda Maguzi were arrested this week at a hotel in Harare. They were conducting a media training course for about 20 people when police broke in. They charged Dowell under the Public Order and Security Act, which requires advance authorization for a public meeting. Maguzi was eventually released without charge. Police interrogated each of the training participants before they were allowed to leave. Zimbabwe's notoriously homophobic President Robert Mugabe has routinely compared gays and lesbians to dogs and pigs. The 90-year-old Mugabe told reporters earlier this month that, "I understand we have a group of homosexuals in this country. I didn't know until I was told the day before yesterday. So we want to check on who is in that group."
Homophobia also remains alive and well in Russia, home of the law against so-called gay propaganda, as strongman Vladimir Putin makes a grab for the Crimean Peninsula. Rainbow flag-carrying LGBT participants carrying placards denouncing sexism and homophobia were pelted with raw eggs at a March 8th International Women's Day march in Moscow. Arriving Russian police first demanded the removal of the rainbow flags, but then discovered that some of the egg-throwing anti-gay thugs were also armed with crowbars, knives, and machetes hidden under their clothes. They took more than a dozen of those thugs into custody.
In happier news for sexual minorities, effective at midnight on March 13th, lesbian and gay couples in the UK who legally married elsewhere were considered to be legally married at home. A quirk in marriage equality legislation passed in January allowed the early recognition. Same-gender couples in England and Wales who are not yet married will have to wait until March 29th to tie the knot. But the marriage equality law now allows them to formally declare their intent to marry. Gay and lesbian couples already in civil partnerships, however, will have to wait until later this year to have their unions converted to civil marriage.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announced this week that health insurance providers offering coverage to heterosexual married couples must, beginning in 2015, offer the same coverage to legally married same-gender couples. The policy announcement was said to be based on last year's U.S. Supreme Court DOMA ruling. The new federal rules apply to all plans that meet the standards of the Affordable Care Act, regardless of where the couple legally married, and even if the state they live in doesn't sanction marriage equality. The Obama administration is encouraging insurers to begin following the new policy right away.
The United Methodist Church has dropped its prosecution of the former dean of Yale Divinity School, the Reverend Dr. Thomas Ogletree, who had faced punishment for officiating his son's wedding to another man. Bishop of New York Martin McLee announced at a press conference this week that he would now approach marriage equality as a theological and spiritual issue rather than a juridical problem. An accompanying press release notes that McLee's announcement is the first time ever a sitting United Methodist bishop has categorically declared he will not prosecute pastors for ministering to LGBTQ people. Reverend Ogletree said at the press conference that officiating the 2012 marriage of his son Thomas with Nicholas Haddad was an act of pastoral faithfulness and fatherly love. Son Thomas told the Associated Press how proud he was of his father.
Seeing my dad being able to bear public witness and take on this leadership role has really invigorated him. But I think that's been extraordinary. I think had it gone to trial, it would have been the scrutiny and the complexity of it may have been not so fun. But I think it's been a really great opportunity to see him engage with this and grow over it and really, as you said, be a public witness.
This week's announcement was somewhat unexpected. Methodist minister Frank Schaefer of Pennsylvania was defrocked in December for officiating his gay son's wedding. The United Methodist Church is the second largest Protestant denomination in the U.S., with 7.5 million members. According to its 2012 Book of Discipline, the United Methodist Church does not condone the practice of homosexuality and considers this practice incompatible with Christian teaching.
In this week's other U.S. marriage news, a federal judge in Tennessee ordered state officials to recognize the unions of three same-gender couples legally married in other states during the consideration of their lawsuit challenging Tennessee's ban on recognizing such marriages. U.S. District Court Judge Alita Trauger wrote that all relevant federal authority indicates that the plaintiffs in this case are indeed likely to prevail on their claims that the anti-recognition laws are unconstitutional. Meanwhile, Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear is paying $100,000 taxpayer dollars to a private law firm to appeal a federal court ruling overturning a similar ban in his state after Attorney General Jack Conway said he could not defend discrimination.
And finally, lawyers for four same-gender couples who legally married in Utah while a ban was briefly lifted urged a U.S. judge this week to force the conservative, heavily Mormon state to recognize their unions while the legal battle over marriage equality plays out in court. More than 1,300 lesbian and gay couples got hitched from late December until early January following a federal court ruling declaring the state's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples to be unconstitutional. The U.S. Supreme Court stopped the nuptials on January 6 while the state appeals. The latest lawsuits challenging state marriage bans were filed on the same day this week in Arizona, Florida, and Indiana. The filings on March 13th joined at least 50 others currently working their way through the legal system in various U.S. states.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 15th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and was produced this week by Wenzel Jones and Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
And I'm Johnny Torres.
Do you wish you could go back in time to encourage your younger self? Take a letter later in the program.
Oh, come along with me to my little corner of the world. Dream a little dream in my little corner of the world.
Ever since pop singer and Florida orange juice huckster Anita Bryant vowed to save our children, a strain of Christian crusaders in the U.S. has been making homophobic hay off her fear-mongering pitch. Bryant launched a successful campaign in the late 1970s to repeal an ordinance in her state's Dade County that banned sexual orientation-based discrimination. She and her backers warned that non-procreating gays and lesbians had to recruit kids to replenish their numbers. It proved to be a winning strategy for several years. But as a new century dawned, the culture war over LGBT rights in the U.S. started to collapse. The misbegotten message about threats to the young, however, and pseudoscientific, pseudo-spiritual claims to cure homosexuality through therapy and prayer found fertile new ground in the East African nation of Uganda. Massachusetts Minister Scott Lively led the evangelical pack, making his first visit in 2002. He returned in 2009 as the proposal for Uganda's anti-homosexuality bill was first circulating. In lengthy presentations attended by parliament and cabinet members, Lively warned that Ugandan children were in jeopardy of being turned into homosexuals by predatory Westerners.
As many as 25% of young people in early adolescence have same-sex attraction of some kind. And here's the dirty little secret that the gay movement doesn't want you to know. The large majority of those people never do anything about it. If you catch them at 12 years old, which they're working very, very aggressively to do, and you tell those children that if you have an attraction towards someone of the same gender, that means you're gay. And that because you're gay, you need to come with us, because you can't go around regular society because they hate you. It's full of homophobes that want to hurt you. So you come with us where you're going to be safe. And suppose you're a little 12-year-old girl and you are feeling an attraction toward other girls. Perfectly natural. It happens all the time. It goes away by the time you're older. But there's that time when, during that when both boys and girls will feel attraction to the other as they're starting to have puberty take place. But instead of it naturally going away as the girl discovers boys and has a normal life, all of a sudden there's another girl in the school and she comes and says, you know, come with me. And she ends up having an orgasm in a relationship with that girl. That automatically, immediately, is like a huge stamp. Boom, boom, you're gay, right? You walk away thinking, I had pleasure in that. And so therefore, I must be gay, right? And then you then, from then forward, can self-identify as gay. And of course, there's a whole network of people ready to simply inculcate you and fold you into their world. You know, predatory gays, and there are a lot of, not everyone is, and I'm not, please don't misquote me, but there are a number of people that are very predatory. They're very sexually oriented, that want to satisfy their sexual desires. Often these are people that were molested themselves. And they're turning it around and they're looking for other people to be able to prey upon. And that they, when they see a child that's from a broken home, it's like they have a flashing neon sign over their head. You know, my dad doesn't love me. Or, you know, I'm discouraged and full of fear about my future, whatever. That child is so vulnerable to a man, a 14-year-old boy, for a man to come along and say, you know, hey, I care about you, right? Now, and then the next thing you know, that child is now identifying as homosexual.
Lively, who's being prosecuted in U.S. federal court for violating the human rights of LGBT Ugandans, was brought back to the East African country later in 2009 by influential Assemblies of God pastor Stephen Langa for another barnstorming tour. He again met with lawmakers, appeared at universities and in the media, and co-hosted a day-long presentation for local pastors. Reverend Langa also leads Uganda's Family Life Network, which sponsored follow-up seminars. He parroted Lively's wacky rendition of LGBT movement history into his definition of the gay agenda.
In America, this gentleman, Henry Gerber, was a German-American soldier who served in Germany after the First World War. And then he went back to America and began activism, but in a very small way, in a very small way. And Henry Gerber molested a boy by the name Champ Simmons. When Champ Simmons grew up, he also molested a boy, Harry Hay. Then Harry Hay is the grandfather of modern gay movement in the 40s. He taught communism for 18 years. And during that time, he learned how society can be taken over using economic means. But he just understood those tactics and taught the gay activists on how to overthrow the moral fiber of the Western world, which was based on marriage and the family. So he taught these guys tactics and strategies of how to overthrow a society. And so they began to do their work. What is the gay agenda? What do they want? What do they want? The first thing they want, a creation of a utopia, a new world order where there's absolutely no restriction on sexual practices. Most of our cultures and most of our societies come from a culture where marriage and family are cherished, and sex is restricted to within marriage. All of us, that's where we come from. Our cultures, even before the white man came, all our cultures, virtually, were like that. But these people, their goal is to overthrow that and have a world where you can do anything, can sleep with anything, with anyone, and with anything. That's what they want. They don't care about you. They want the children. That's what the gay want to do. That's what the gay want to do.
Save the children, save the children, save the children. Save the children.
For the record, there's no evidence that German-American LGBT rights trailblazer Henry Gerber ever had inappropriate relations with children, or that pioneering modern-day movement leader Harry Hay was molested by the man whom Gerber never molested. Lange's seminar also heard from the Director of Research for Uganda's Parliament, Charles Tuhazy. He argued that the nation's colonial-era anti-homosexuality laws made it difficult to punish gay activists.
As my experience in Parliament, I have to say a bit about the legal status, the legal state standing about this issue in Uganda. Right now, there is only, I think, in the Penal Code, there is only one verse in the Penal Code which says, it is illegal to have carnal knowledge against the order of nature. That law is extremely inefficient. It is ineffective. It was coined in the 1950s, and it is totally outdated, because even in court, that law can be challenged. So what we think is necessary now is to draft a new law that comprehensively deals with the issue of homosexuality.
Uganda's so-called Kill the Gays bill, because it originally punished aggravated homosexuality with execution, was formally introduced in Parliament on October 14, 2009 by MP David Bahati, a man with enduring and intimate ties to leading U.S. Christian evangelical groups. It eventually passed almost unanimously in Parliament on December 20, 2013, and was signed into law by President Yoweri Museveni on February 24th of this year. With the death penalty reportedly removed, life in prison is now the maximum sentence. The Anti-Homosexuality Act also criminalizes advocating for LGBT rights and requires citizens to report suspected homosexuals to the police. But the battle's not over yet.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights.
A coalition of human rights organizations, LGBT activists, noted Ugandan scholars and commentators, and a few brave politicians filed a lawsuit this week challenging the constitutionality of the Anti-Homosexuality Act. While the case winds its way through the legal system, many of the same plaintiffs are asking the country's high court to immediately order Ugandan tabloids to stop publishing the names, photographs, and addresses of suspected homosexuals. Arrests, violent assaults, and evictions have followed such sensational front-page stories, and harassment and attacks against others perceived to be gay have mushroomed. But the filing of this week's lawsuit against the new anti-gay law signals that the epic culture war over LGBT rights in Uganda, as well as in several other African countries, is far from settled. Some of the source material for this report came from Political Research Associates and Mother Jones magazine. I'm Greg Gordon for This Way Out. And finally this week, with pen in hand, civil rights attorney and syndicated columnist Abby Dees does what we all wish we could do.
Dear 14-year-old me, as yet another year,
nights from 8 to 10 p.m. The Melting Pot, featuring DJs, producers, and electronic artists from around the globe. Win tickets and stay up on events each and every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on The Melting Pot, right here at 90.7 FM KBOO.
Last year, the Oregon legislature passed a bill to reduce the size and cost of our state prison system. The bill flatlined prison growth, reduced sentences, and extended transitional leave. The money saved from these reforms was reinvested in Oregon counties for programs and services to help reduce prison intakes, protect the public, and lower recidivism. Tune in to Prison Pipeline to hear how Washington County plans to spend its justice reinvestment funds. That's Prison Pipeline, March 24th at 6:30 p.m.
The time is 7:03. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Hard Knock Radio is next.
2, 3, 4. Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
History is history. Never been done before. Never been done in this before. Country. In this country.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another edition. It is Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. On today's show, we talk about the hackathon and why Oakland is a major destination place for tech companies. Also, We're going to be talking about Paul Flores. That's right, poet extraordinaire's brand new play that deals with gang violence and the gang lifestyle. All that and more coming up after the afternoon headlines.
Yeah, what's really going on? This is Boost from the Coup with Hard Knock Radio. You gotta be there.
What up, y'all? It's Aya Sage, a.k.a. Rocky Rivera, and you're listening to Hard Knock Radio News.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
We can't survive on 725. We can't survive on 725. We can't survive on 725.
No more wage theft!
McDonald's workers in Raleigh, North Carolina, joining with their brothers and sisters in several states on Tuesday to protest alleged wage theft by McDonald's. The workers struggling for $15 an hour and the right to form unions without employer intimidation turned out Tuesday to demand that McDonald's stop practices the workers say amount to wage theft. Class action lawsuits were filed last week in California, New York, and Michigan, alleging the wage theft and demanding that McDonald's pay the workers what they say they are owed and stop the wage stealing practices. Americans United for Change is going on an 18-city bus tour dubbed Give America a Raise. The tour, supporting President Obama's call to raise the minimum wage, starts March 24th in Maine and will end April 3rd in Washington, D.C. A 16-ton anti-poverty billboard on wheels will travel to 10 key states. The bus tour will feature low-wage workers, labor leaders, including AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka, U.S. Labor Secretary Tom Perez, some U.S. senators, and political candidates. It's been 5 years since the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour has been raised. In Burlington, Vermont, union bus drivers are on strike. Teamsters Local 597 says the drivers will stay off the job as long as it takes to get a fair labor contract. About 10,000 riders a day depend on the bus drivers, including students in Burlington schools. So far, no new contract talks are scheduled. The drivers started their strike on Monday. Denver Super Shuttle drivers have been struggling for 2 years to get a union contract. The CWA members have rejected a 30% pay cut proposal from the company, which would have slashed their pay so low that many would have qualified for food stamps, Medicaid, and other public assistance. Now the company is imposing that cut on them. An online petition at MoveOn.org is supporting the drivers. The 6th annual Progressive Wisconsin Grassroots Network Festival is coming up March 22nd in Mazomanie, Wisconsin. Messaging for Democracy is this year's theme. Wisconsin